Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And welcome to Questions You Want Answered, where I get a member of the What Culture Wrestling team and ask them as many of your wrestling questions as possible. But before we get into it today, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, where we review Raw, SmackDown, the Wednesday Night War between AEW and NXT, pay-per-views, we have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. And joining me today as a part of the Q&A community is one Michael Sidgwick. Sidgwick, you've been looking forward to this, haven't you?
I have, yes, indeed. I really like engaging with people on Twitter. The mega fans, of course, not the mutants. I don't want to tell them what they can do, but it involves something they probably do most nights. I would like to point out, just to the mega fans out there who might get disappointed throughout the course of this podcast, two things. One, Adam Wilborn is screening and selecting the questions. Mm-hmm. So if yours has somehow been missed, please don't blame me. I will just deflect the blame onto my esteemed host. Yeah. Second, hopefully it's not the last time we do this, so your questions might be included on a further edition.
Exactly. We had a lot of fun doing this last week with Hanfler, and hopefully we'll do lots more. We'll get different members of the What Culture Wrestling team on, but of course, the Dadley Boys will be regular contributors to this sort of thing. Let's dive straight into it then. I tweeted this earlier, at Adam Wilborn on Twitter. You can follow Michael Sidgwick at M Sidgwick. Follow us all at What Culture WWE on Twitter, of course. Let's start with a question that's sort of jumping the gun a little bit, potentially for our Wednesday Night War preview tomorrow, from Daniel BA4, who says, with Cody becoming more and more annoying over time, do you think this is a planned slow-burning heel turn, or is this a mess-up and it wasn't planned? I honestly don't know which one it is, he says.
Christ, that's a complex question about which I have several thoughts. So hopefully I won't talk half an hour. That's the end. Sorry, that's just the one question. Look, here's the thing. When he first started playing a more aggressive champion, I honestly believed throughout that TNT title run that it was the correct thing to do. He's very good at playing a heel, which he just measured perfectly enough in matches that were designed to get his babyface opponents over. It's a role that Hiroshi Tanahashi's played hell. It's a role that Bret Hart played at times against Diesel in terms of just slotting in various nefarious tactics, like situationally dependent on the matches. And of course, babyface versus babyface exhibitions are kind of boring. The idea is if he cheated or was more aggressive than normal against a Jungle Boy, it's probably better to get Jungle Boy over as the babyface in that context. I thought he measured it perfectly. Ultimately, he did great business as a strict babyface with Brodie Lee, and he did as good business with Darby Allin, where he played that aggressor. Ever since then, the characters kind of become muddled. And I guess the most succinct answer to that question is that, yes, he does play a situational role. He likes to play a layered character. He's long been a proponent of the idea that old-fashioned babyfaces and heels are dead, which is quite strange because Cody's so magnificent at playing the babyface, which in itself in the 21st century is such an incredibly complex and challenging role to pull off. But nonetheless, as I understand it, based on his past comments, Cody does not believe in the strict binary dynamics of babyfaces and heels. We've seen plentiful evidence of that on Dynamite of late. Two, increasingly mixed success, I will say. This is a sentiment that appears to be becoming quite consensus in the pro wrestling online community. Of course, we don't really have crowds of significant number to kind of definitively state this is going in one direction. I will say one thing, which will say a lot, and that is in 2019, I thought the idea of Cody Rhodes ever becoming a heel again was absolutely untenable. He was something more than a babyface. He was a savior and a hero to like grown men and women, like adult fans received him like this. And now I personally believe, yes, he could turn heel, whether that's an indictment or not, because why would you squander such a valuable, impossible role is another matter. But regardless, if in fact a lot of people are turned off and he's going to have to become a heel in some ways when crowds return, that's always the big thing as well, is that when crowds return in full number, they're not going to boo Cody Rhodes. They're going to be like so high on life of the new life returning that it's going to be impossible for him to turn heel, even though it seems to be trending that way at the moment. Again, I will reiterate, what I once thought inconceivable in 2019 doesn't really feel that anymore, which might say a lot.
What I'd say to this as well, and like you say, the heel babyface dynamic is not necessarily blurred in AEW in terms of like, oh, they're all babyface and heels, but it's not as defined as you would expect in something like WWE. And I don't want this to become a WWE versus AEW thing.
Why not? It's my podcast.
Yeah, what I will say is he wouldn't become, I don't see him becoming a heel in the traditional sense, i.e., I'm suddenly just going to be a bastard. I'm suddenly going to offer a bounty on bloody, I mean, QT Marshall's the heel in this feud, but, you know, a bounty on Darby Allin's head or whatever. I see he's very self-aware in terms of like, yeah, it'd be one of those things where he'd, in storyline, start to believe his own hype of like, yeah, I'm the reason why this company's doing so well. And I get my own entrance and blah, blah, blah. I think I could see it happening. And certainly the way he was like, If I get a submission on you next week, QT, I'll let it go. Don't worry, I'm nice like that. I there's an element of it again. But then again, he is also fighting through injury. And like you say, it's very, very hard to turn people against Cody Rhodes when he is one of the faces of AEW, which is one of the saviors of wrestling right now.
Yeah, just before we get to the next question, Bret Hart, again, it's Survivor Series 1993, but are wearing different, more flashy, eye-catching gear to his brothers. Had to play a bit of a dick to make Owen Hart think he was a bit of a dick to set in motion the events of that legendary feud. I'm not saying the QT Marshall thing is going to be quite as good as that. I'm just saying that there's so much precedent for babyfaces knowingly flirting with the heel side to get a story over. And maybe it's no different, but I will say that this sentiment is really growing a lot.
Sticking with AEW, let's get this question from Tyler Holloway, who says, I can't read it. Can you do your word after I have to say the first thing? After
deftly
booking the Trios tournament, do you see anyone better than Wardlow to eventually take the TNT title off Darby? Yeah, who do you see being the next TNT champion, Sig?
Ooh, right. The problem with my choice is that it doesn't really make a great deal of storyline sense. I think Ricky Starks would be phenomenal in the role as TNT champion. He doesn't work singles matches anywhere near as often as he should on Dynamite. He's the complete performer, great in promos, great in beatdown angles as well. He's not just this incredibly technically accomplished wrestler. The nuances of his work, you can really watch two or three times to get. He's just fantastic. He's not only this awesome promo. Like, I've seen Ricky Starks beat down Darby Allin, and it just looks like vicious, aggressive, like animosity-laced stuff. Like, I've got the biggest, I hold his work in the highest regard, but the storyline machinations mean we're not quite there yet. Ultimately, Wardlow is a long, long, long-term prospect, and he's still young, and I think the money in him is as a babyface. I would like to see him win his first title as a babyface. In order to extract what you can from a performer who doesn't really wrestle like it, in fact, he wrestles better now than he did when he was in his late 20s and early 30s, but as a character, you can't keep pinning or losing or normalizing such a force of nature like Lance Archer. I would have Lance Archer, and he's heading towards that program with Darby Allin by way of Sting. I would have Lance Archer win the TNT title, because even after he loses it, he still has the luster, the aura of having won like a really prestigious and protected title. So he'll be over as a star during the run and for a while thereafter. And I feel like the longer he just goes, not 50-50, but like, I guess 50-50, he lost the program with Moxley and then won the program with Kingston. Like, you can't normalize a guy like that. And I think he's got real value in the short and medium term, having won the TNT title.
From AEW to WWE, looking ahead, less than 2 weeks now until WrestleMania, of course. TJA says, TJ Andrews 93 on Twitter says, the Raw after WrestleMania, we usually get a return or a debut. Who would you like that to be?
Don't know. I don't really think about WWE in terms of anticipation anymore. I will try my level best to watch what unfolds in front of me with a clear mind. And it's so hard because the precedent of years of garbage just stain everything. Who could possibly at this point return as a genuine star to make a difference to Becky engage? Lynch. Say again?
Becky Lynch?
I just think she'd rather be a mother. And to be honest, she would need a complete and utter character tweak because she was becoming so insufferable in this role that we said at the time, surely they're telling a pride comes before a fall story. And no, pride comes before a win. I'm just going to be Shayna Baszler at WrestleMania. Like, they had completely flanderized and exaggerated her character to the point of it becoming like really quite unbearable. And yet, she's such a lovely person in real life, who's just done something nice and she's just pioneered a new path for women in pro wrestling, being a top star, leaving on her own terms to make a really personal decision. You can't at all fault that. So she'd come out as a babyface and that run had ran its course. It's about time they really started to recognize what they have in that geek locker room and to not make them geeks anymore. Like, there's just such an abundance of talent rotting away in the performance center, catering, the 24/7 geek locker room alike, that I would like to see no one return. I would like to see people get pushed, is my answer. And it's the genuine one as well. Yeah. The plaster era of covering up gaping wounds, the rusted bike era with new licks of paint. It's all completely and utterly dead. Like, they've got ridiculous resources. They have accrued them for just disgusting means of like trying to stifle other companies, and by doing that you kill careers. There's not enough TV time, and who wants more? Not me. Use what you've got. You've paid for it. Use it. I don't like waste, Wilborn. I don't like waste. It's a thing that happens when you become a father. I don't like waste. And Vince McMahon needs to eat his peas, the old prick.
What I will say just popped into my head thinking about Raw last night in particular, and obviously I don't know the reasoning why Joe wasn't on commentary, and I'm not going to sit here and speculate as to whether it's the ongoing global bastard injury, a return or whatever, but he would be a hell of a return. And it's someone who's, you know, people have talked about him doing the old, right, that's it, I'm going to take my headset off and get back in the wrestling ring. I couldn't care less whether he does that or whether he just has the big fanfare of a return, and whether you have Lashley or a McIntyre as the world champion coming out of WrestleMania, he'd be someone perfect to maybe not immediately face them, but build him up as a SummerSlam opponent, and then finally strap him with that world title. It's a dream scenario, but I think he would be around the top of my list of post-WrestleMania returns.
He's cooked. And the thing about him being cooked is that's fine. And that's, I mean, no disrespect by that. 2000s Joe, like, his ROH run's one of my favorite runs ever in pro wrestling. I mean it respectfully, but I try to be truthful on these things. He's absolutely thrashed. And the idea is there's no worst company to be thrashed in than WWE, because they will not protect you. They are a content factory that will put Jeff Hardy in 15-minute matches. He's no longer capable of really working to a high standard. The same thing would happen with Joe. Sorry, Wilborn.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare.
PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Well, let's move on and talk a little bit about the Forbidden Door. We got a question from Dan the Bearded Wizard here on Twitter, who says, with the ongoing global bastard about to slope off, please, God, let that be the case. Do you think the New Japan and AEW will expand on the whole Kenny and the Bullet Club angle? If so, what excites you most about it? And has that changed since the Forbidden Door pod you guys did?
There's an increasing problem with the AEW and New Japan potential cross-promotional relationship, that in the sort of frenzy and excitement of Kenta's first appearance on Dynamite, probably obscured, and that is New Japan Pro Wrestling is just, it's in the mud. They're not drawing. A lot of the match combinations are worn. The match quality remains excellent at its peak, but the booking has just been actively terrible. And a big part of that booking being actively terrible is this zombified New Japan arm, if you like, of the Bullet Club. Ceaseless, relentless interferences.
I remember you moaning about that on the G1 Climax like last year.
Yeah, it's been trending downwards for quite some time. And here's the thing, I love the... It's either shoot tension or it's worked immaculately between Tama Tonga and the Elite guys. But it's not going to make for a good match. I've seen Tama Tonga, who, by the way, in angles and tags and heat segments, he's got such an awesome, no Fs given energy. Like, I'll cherish the memory of him crotch chopping PCO at the Madison Square Garden show in WrestleMania 35 weekend. Like one of the most sickening bumps I've ever seen. And when everyone else is like, oh, God, is he dead? Tama Tonga was like, don't care. I'm going to tell him to suck my cock. Amazing stuff. All that said, he's not a great singles guy. So the Tama Tonga versus Kenny Omega match, like, Kenny would have his work cut out for him. Just even in the most dream scenario possible, I don't want to see too much of the Bullet Club in any promotion. So feels like the real stories between Kenny and Kota Ibushi at this point. You'd obviously have to tie up the loose end if there was to be a relationship, but it's not a particularly exciting one for me. Like, what remains of the Bullet Club is just rotting.
What do you see next for the way they work together then? Is it going to be more AEW guys going to New Japan or what? Is it, because it's like, it has to be a back and forth this, of course.
Yeah, I mean, once it all, as I said, like, there's going to be problems in booking. And I trust Tony Khan, and I can't believe I'm saying this because he was so magnificent for so long, but I didn't trust Ghetto with it. The idea is that you couldn't just necessarily do something like the WWF versus WCW feud. It was a long-running, real-life rivalry, and you could get certain homegrown stars, or what passes for homegrown stars, to unite, and you could believe the story. Like, both New Japan and AEW was so, like, fractured into factions that there's no one AEW side or New Japan side, so it would take a great deal of effort to do an actual proper interpromotional feud. So I'd realistically just do individual programs that makes sense depending on who's getting pushed and what history there is to exploit, particularly with Kenny and Kota. So basically anything but an actual interpromotional war, because the way in which both companies book, it means it doesn't really make much sense. It's going to be a massive challenge to, like, cross promote effectively between those two promotions.
especially with the anticipation that has built, obviously, because like you say, people are sat here saying, well, basically coronavirus is finished. And it's like, well, it's not. And there's not going to be just freedom of travel left, right and centre when you know, the majority of people do get vaccinated. There's still going to be issues. There's still going to be stumbling blocks. There's still going to be things that have to be changed at the last minute. Talking a little bit about New Japan, I'm going to use this tweet from Riley Cool. I hope I've got that right, as a sort of a jumping off point, particularly this afternoon with the unveiling of the new IWGP World Heavyweight Championship, of course. Riley says, I just saw the new IWGP World Heavyweight design and don't even know what to say. Honestly, Sidgwick, what is happening in New Japan? I am very lost. Where, it's not too hyperbolic to say, where did it all go wrong, is it, Sidge?
No, not at all. Not at all. In terms of the specific answer to that question, is that for whatever reason, they've decided to all but abandon the glorious lineage of the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, which is already prefixed with international. So why do world? It's just, I don't know why they've done that. It just feels like Ghetto's lost it. He's absolutely lost it. And it's hard to articulate when someone's lost it, because the only thing you can say is, oh, they've lost it. You can't deconstruct and analyze irrational decisions. Those two things don't marry up with one another. So it's always hard to articulate. That's why books are written about these things, because there are so many factors that converge to create a collapse. I'm limited in my time to expand upon my actual love of Japanese pro wrestling, but from what limited viewings I've got here and there, New Japan, from being the best promotion in the world, is like the fourth best promotion in Japan at the moment. Like Stardom's getting raves, DDT's getting raves, Dragon Gate's getting raves. New Japan is just in creative decline and commercial decline. Like, they are not drawing fans. And I understand that there's an obvious caveat to that, being that there are few fans to draw nowadays. But even with the capacity that they limit their events at, they're not drawing. And that, personally, I think the reason why they're not drawing is that they've lost it. What they've done is they've probably dicked around too much with Tetsuya Naito, with his inability to realize these completely epic chases for the title. They've negated the G1 climax as a stipulation. They've undermined how grand and arduous that tournament is by just doing the two nights at Wrestle Kingdom deal they've done over the last 2 years. Ghetto just completely seemed to lose his mind entirely. During the hiatus New Japan went on as a result of the COVID pandemic. When they returned, there was a gimmick belt. That was Okada's idea. He needed to be reined in on that. Because of loyalties, I guess, to Evil, Ghetto pushed him as the dual champion and Bullet Club defector, and it just ruined the art of the great New Japan main event, which is fine, because some people thought that this stemmed back for a while, and they'd been doing... They imposed 40-minute main events on people where they shouldn't, because it was getting a bit tiresome. What's worse about that is not only did they take all the art and the sporting grandeur and the clean finishes of the old main event match, typical of New Japan, they took all of that away from the New Japan match, and they kept the 40-minute length. Mm. And Evil was just doing relentless interference-laden matches that went on for 40 minutes. A lot of the combinations feel utterly worn as all hell. Like, there's only so many times I can watch great matches, because the way the industry's blown up just feels like he's, like most wrestling promoters and bookers, they consider their own trademarks sacred and will not budge from them because they made them. And the 40-minute matches, regardless of whether they should be 40-minute matches, the continuing of the stables like Bullet Club because the merch does well or whatever. It just feels like it's all completely dead, and a lot of factors have converged to create that.
Interesting question here about WrestleMania from Smallsy13, aka the friend that shows you what not to do. Says, with WrestleMania being the first time in a year fans will be in attendance, do you think there may be some mid-match on-the-fly changes to a match finish, with WWE having a preconceived notion of who will be cheered or booed and the crowd acting different to their expectation? We sort of talked about this over the last few weeks, of course, with Lashley and McIntyre, until they've now gone, this is the good guy, this is the bad guy. But what do you reckon some of the other matches? Do you reckon they're going to try and have to adapt it, or will they just go, this is who it is and you'll have to lump it?
This is how WWE has booked and laid out its matches for years and years and years in total defiance against the will of the audience, because their will must be imposed on that audience. It's an incredibly, incredibly micromanaged pro wrestling company to the pack that it's not pro wrestling. It's not the spirit of pro wrestling. It's not a performance art. It is micromanaged content, whether you like it or not. And it's just completely against the philosophy with which WWE does things, to listen to the audience, because WWE is better in their minds than the audience. I would prefer it to be the other way, but it's the way.
I'll be like a parent here. Answer this one, and then I'll let you have your dessert with a really nice AW question. Bradley Nelson, a.k.a. Big Nell, says, I'm getting massive 2005 Cena and Batista vibes with how WWE are positioning Rhea Ripley and Bianca Belair this year. Do you think it's going to be a similar torch-passing WrestleMania for the two women like it was at WrestleMania 21? I do feel fairly confident on both them leaving as world champions.
I mean, yeah, they probably will leave as world champions. That division stayed. It's in dire need of a revamp across both Mondays and Friday nights. I personally think the Cena Batista thing is incredibly generous. It's just not that kind of company anymore. The idea is that in 2005, rather, Cena and Batista won their respective title matches, and they both embarked on like really famous main event runs. Batista's was a bit slower than Cena's. Cena's just off to the races. Batista had about a year of, oh, this isn't working out, and then it did work. I just can't see, as talented as Belair and Ripley are, I just can't see WWE promoting with the same conviction. But at least in the short term, they'll probably both win at Mania. They'll want us to think that such a seismic passing of the torch has happened. They might have every intention of passing the torch with such conviction. They're rubbish, man. Who can you think of in the past 3 years has been consistently over and pushed at a consistent headline level? No one.
Jay McMahon, but that's different.
Yeah, of course. Like Drew McIntyre came out of nowhere in January 2020. Mm-hmm. Roman Reigns, obviously, is Roman Reigns. He's the rule-proving exception. Daniel Bryan's eaten losses to Cesaro in 4 minutes in February. Like, even Daniel Bryan gets rubbish. Daniel Bryan in this company still eats. It's ridiculous.
Actually, speaking of Daniel Bryan, I'm going to get to this AW question in a second. But speaking of Daniel Bryan, N8 says, what is the ultimate WWE-AW crossover match, and why is it Omega versus Bryan?
It absolutely is. The worst thing is like, they've had a match in PWG, and when you might have first heard it, you think, oh, Christ, I'm going to watch that. And it's total comedy. And it's hilarious, but it's total comedy. And Omega wasn't anywhere near the performer he is now. Daniel Bryan versus Kenny Omega would be absolutely fantastic, because it might piss people off here, but as good as it was seeing Daniel Bryan reverse a spear to do some submissions, can you imagine him at the last millisecond doing something, rolling through into an ankle lock from a V-trigger? Oh my God. It would just be crafted so perfectly, like mat-based grounded technique versus the most propulsive guy you'd really want to ground lest you get a concussive blow in the face. Oh, God, it would just be absolutely amazing.
Great question here from Ant, calling back to a podcast we did a long, long time ago. Is there anything AEW hasn't done from your pre-AEW wrestling promotion wish list? If so, what? And would you still want them to do whatever it is?
Just to expand on that, I've said before that one of the reasons why I really love AEW isn't just because it's great. It's because it seemed to... I had written various articles between 2016 and 2019 before AEW came into existence saying, oh, Christ, why don't WWE do this? WWE should be doing this. Why aren't they doing this? It would be so much better if they did do this. And AEW arrives and does unscripted promos. It does a big range of action. It's not homogenized. They do incredibly details-rich long-term storytelling. They do factions. They do clean finishes. Like, and it's just like, it feels like Tony Khan's been reading my author page. Obviously, he hasn't. Maybe he has.
Yeah.
But all right, that kid's got a good idea for a promotion. Like, why wouldn't I love it? It's a bias to say, oh, those things I've been asking for 3 years. All right, they're here. Right. In terms of that wish list, nah, the clean finishes is the most important bloody thing. Like, it's corny DQ crap that doesn't create a tier. The unscripted promos, it's like, can you imagine that the very DNA of the pro wrestler is such that for years, WWE have somehow contrived to make it normal that they would give like sheet music to a guitarist who's like really good at writing songs. Like, why would that ever happen? Right. And yet in wrestling, it did. And people can't get their heads around how that's so monumentally messed up. One thing I would like AEW to do more, and that I have campaigned for in the past, but I've realized, I think it's just a mood and a vibe thing of the 21st century. I think it's just a disposition of the culture of the people just in the West, particularly in the UK and the US. It's just hard not to, it's hard to be earnest. Everything's so ironic and detached and like real emotion so difficult, which again circles back to the start of this podcast, which is why I was so impressed by Cody's work in 2019. Never thought we'd get that kind of earnest babyface fare again, that sense of real emotion in the match with Dustin. I would like fans to be more earnest, and I would like there to be real hatred in AEW. Sometimes it can get a bit cute and a bit ha-ha and a bit funny, and I'm a fan of that, and I think sometimes you have to go that route. But yeah, I've wanted real hatred in pro wrestling for a long time. And I think the reason why it's so rare is because it's harder to get properly invested, because we're all just husks. We're all depressed husks living in a hellscape, Wilborn.
Let's go to some questions from the Sidgwick mega fans. Let's start with Sarah. Do you think Blood and Guts should just be one whole pay-per-view, Inner Circle versus The Pinnacle, and Britt Baker and the heel women versus Sheeta and the Faces, and who would you put in the two women's teams? We've been counting down for Blood and Guts for over a year now, Sidge.
I know. It's going to happen at some point. Sarah, you know me. I'm an unbiased critic. And it would be biased of me to say, give me all the Blood and Guts, because I've been saying for years, are the WWE's completely oversaturated their gimmick matches. However, across two separate shows, yes, I would absolutely love a Woman's Blood and Guts match. Absolutely love it. And of course, Britt Baker has a star in it, because she is the new hardcore legend, and she needs to bleed. And War Games matches are full of blood. And even if I can't think of the specific makeup of the heel team or the babyface team right now, if nothing else, having a Blood and Guts match, women's Blood and Guts match, would force AEW to do something I've been asking for quite some time now: form women's stables.
Yeah.
Baker, Nyla Rose, Jade Cargill are the core nucleus of the heel group I want to see in AEW. So they obviously would have to be involved in such a match. But I don't want to see two Blood and Guts matches on the same show. And I think if you did see that, you would get the overkill and it would undermine the one that followed.
Let's blitz some final questions as we come to an end here. JD, am I a terrible person for wanting women included in some of the teams in AEW's trios tourney? Call me a weirdo, but I want Jade Cargill to put Marco Stunt's head between her knees and crush it like a watermelon.
Regrettably, JD, you are in fact weird. Nice guy, though.
Yes. Matt Reigns says, long time fan, why is this Dadley so much better than the other one? Thanks,
Dad. The other one's good. The other one's pretty good.
Pretty good. What else have we got here? Have WWE ruined any drama around the Roman Edge Brian triple threat by signposting that Roman will lose the title without being pinned, asks Baxty B?
Truthfully, I've got no idea who's winning that match. And that likely has much to do with the fact that they didn't know who was going to be in it a week ago. So for all of the wrong reasons that have depicted Edge to look like a moron, Daniel Bryan maybe to look a little bit entitled, just characters I don't like anymore or like less than I did at the start of this year. For those reasons, I really don't know who is going to eat the pin. Because it feels like if Edge was going to win that match and win the title, like, they don't like him enough to trust him to be in the match by himself. So that feels like it's not going to win. Do they like Daniel Bryan so much more again? I've got no idea, but yeah, not in that. Oh, this is a really well-cultivated storyline with strong performers way, in the worst way. But again, when the bell rings, it'll all be awesome. My personal opinion is that Roman's going to retain.
Yeah, I've gone from being like, well, whatever happens, Roman beats Edge, to genuinely, it's one of the hardest matches to call, I'd say, at WrestleMania. It's one I'm most looking forward to, I'd say. So I think that's going to be really intriguing over the next couple of weeks, see how they build towards that. Jack Goodwin says, with Tony Khan commissioning hit songs all over the place for talent, what known songs would you commission for Mox, Britt Baker and Khan himself?
Well, Khan doesn't get a song because that would mean he would have to be an on-screen regular.
He could have a remake of Craig David's 7 Days called 9 Days. That'd be good. So you could have that.
As great as he is as a booker, he's as bad as an on-screen talent. So I love you, Tony Khan, but please don't. You don't need a song because you don't need to be on Dynamite. And you've said this, so please uphold that. Who were the other two?
Moxley and Baker, I think it was. Yes, Moxley and Baker.
Moxley gets Cowboys from Hell from Pantera because it's just an absolute ripper. And he's got more of a high energy entrance. And I just think Cowboys from Hell being the tag team theme of Eddie Kingston and John Moxley, like if you could make them look even cooler than they are, yeah, that's the only way to do it, in my opinion.
For some reason, I was like, what song's got Doctor in it that's not Sodding Dr. Jones by Aqua? And it's that, Doctor, Doctor, give me the news. I don't know why, just because she loves banging on about being a sodding doctor.
Doctor, Doctor, give me the news. I'm the face of AEW. No, she gets Rain and Blood by Slayer.
Right, final couple of questions here. Shane and Pepper says, it's only appropriate to ask today, what constitutes a good belt design?
You don't get too cute with it. I don't want to see sharp angles. I want to see nice rounded curves.
I'm talking about
belt designs.
Yes, I think it was your list. Either your, I feel like Benjamin Richardson, I remember doing once about like the nicest belts, and it was quite early on in my days at What Culture, if I remember right. So my knowledge was like, I don't know, the IC title looks nice. And then someone's like, here's the Open the Dream Gate Championship. And I was like, oh my God, what's this?
The thing is, with a wrestling belt, they're actually, why does the Intercontinental title look so beautiful? The old one, the classic one. And the answer is, I don't know, it just looks lush. So it's a really hard question to answer. And that was a very difficult and, let's face it, pretentious article for me to write. It was me. I've never felt more pretentious writing about that.
I think I bought 3 pairs of sunglasses at one point.
in a way that I can't really define, it just must look beautiful. It must look prestigious. Don't dick about with sharp, jagged angles. Classic rounded designs. Lovely decoration, some nice studding. I'm a big fan of studding. Eagles always help. I like the new WWE United States title. I think that looks gorgeous. Eagles, maybe it's just a thing from my youth. Eagles always look lush. By sharp angles, I don't have anything sticking out. Like this new Japan one. Tell you what's gorgeous, the AEW tags. Big. Bold, the word world in big letters because they're meant to be world champions. Big fan of that. Big fan of that. Rounded curves, gold studs. I'm a traditional guy.
And no butterflies. I think that goes without saying.
Yes. That's why I didn't say it.
Final question here, just to want to indulge us a little bit. From Shawboy, great question this. What would you both use as your finisher if you were wrestlers? Bonus question, what would the Dadleys tag team finisher be?
At the minute, I'm using the package pile driver on my kids.
Was your James, your son, doing the diving headbutt for a while?
He was doing the Kakeshi.
That was it.
I haven't shown him bloody Makito, Jesus Christ. You heard Twitter filth. But like I've shown him the Kakeshi. At the minute, when I'm having wrestling fights with my kids, predetermined. Like, the blows are cushioned, don't worry. But, like, the package pile driver says they're easy to pick up, but it looks devastating, so I can terrify their mom. Like, don't do that, you're going to land them on the necks. And it's like, I'm a pro. I'm working with a spotless safety record. And they can, like, see themselves.
James's head full of a V-trigger. V-trigger, here we go!
I do V-triggers to James because he can duck out the way at the last minute. Well, I'm not trying to let him take bumps. It's like he's doing, I'm trying to show him sequences. Like he ducks the clothesline, ducks the second clothesline, headbutt to the gut, and then I let him give him DDT. So he's working out sequences now. I think the books were like 11, 12 when they said that Stanton actually put together sequences. James is six, so James Sidgwick is all elite. You're going to see the graphic in about 20 years.
That's fantastic. I don't know what my finish. I still, me and my friends still get a huge pop out of the. It's not even the finish. It's not even a finisher, really. Doing the rocks, waiting to hit a rock bottom on someone when they're just not looking, just the waiting behind them. That's always a bit of a boy popper. And I distinctly remember Ben getting pedigreed by someone the first time we got to like go on a bounty castle. It was like, right, someone's getting pedigreed. Dadley's tag team finisher to finish us all off here.
Right. Well, I can't have the doomsday device because it would be murder on his back. Because he is 80 years old, his hamstring. So he can't do the doomsday device or any sort of versions of them. He's got a lot of experience, even though he's old. He's a dad. He can put kids on their shoulders, but not grown men. So I think the best, he's got the technique, but he hasn't got the strength in his back these days. I think he could put someone up for a shatter machine.
Yeah.
But he couldn't quite go all the way. My bloody back's gone with a doomsday device. So I think the best happy medium there is a shatter machine.
Fantastic. There you go. Right, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you as always, Sidge, with this. And we will do this again. Apologies if we haven't had time to ask you a question. I tried to fly through as many as we possibly could. But we'll do this again with a variety of the cast of What Culture and, of course, Michael Sidgwick back again. But if you wanted to continue the conversation with us all on Twitter, it's at What Culture WWE. Well, actually, they can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
M. Sidgwick.
You can follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at What Culture WWE. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, including, of course, our previews and reviews of the Wednesday Night War, which I think, if I'm not mistaken, really hasn't got much longer left after today's announcement. I'm not sure if that's actually official. It actually happened whilst we were recording. So, yeah, do subscribe for that. And then we can actually go back to normal and have reasonable sleep schedules for the mad week of never-ending wrestling going forward after that. But anyway, this has been Your Questions Answered. My thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you soon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.